Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and two things on the dock today. First, Brooke Schuyler Richardson. A lot of Crime Talk aficionados wanted to talk about it, so we will. And number two on the docket, another Chris Watts housing update. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you, and we know that this channel would not be possible without you. If you like the channel, please subscribe. If you like the video, hit that like button. And because of YouTube trying to demonetize and take us out of the rankings of videos based upon independent news commentary, things you aren't going to hear on the evening news, you'd help us greatly if you shared our videos. So the first thing on the docket we want to talk about today is a case that I've had many, many requests from the Crime Talk aficionado community out there, and that is the case of Brooke Schuyler Richardson. The case of Brooke Schuyler Richardson will be coming to an end probably by Friday. And for those of you who are not familiar with this case, Brooke Schuyler Richardson was kind of the all-American girl, so to speak. She was a cheerleader. Well, she also became pregnant, and it's alleged by the prosecution that she delivered the child, then killed the child, then buried the child in the backyard. And when everything was discovered, Schuyler Richardson originally told the police that the child was born stillborn, and then she also, in a subsequent interview, stated that she did try to burn it or cremate it just a little bit. Now, the police came to her in that particular interview, whereby saying that they had information that they knew what had happened. Well, in reality, they didn't. All they simply had were some bones. Needless to say, the district attorney prosecuting the case believes that Brooke killed the child, and here we are with the murder case now pending. Well, yesterday, Brooke Schuyler Richardson's friends testified, and they put on what they call basically a lot of character evidence. Although Richardson was a cheerleader and quite popular in school, one of her teachers at Carlisle High School testified that she wasn't just friends with all the popular people and the jocks and the sports stars. At lunch, she would often sit next to students with autism so that they didn't have to sit alone. Now, Richardson is 20, and she's charged with aggravated murder and involuntary manslaughter, and she's accused of deliberately killing her newborn child and burying her in the backyard in 2017. Richardson's attorneys allege that she had a stillbirth and didn't know what else to do except to bury the child. The prosecutors allege that it is the perfect crime because authorities didn't discover the baby until nothing was left but bones. And if convicted, she could spend the rest of her life in prison. Yesterday, kind of the last day of testimony, jurors heard stories from Richardson's kindness. They described how she volunteered as a coach, a cheerleader for the team, donated time for kids with special needs. Jurors also heard testimony about a personality disorder and how Richardson had been sexually abused when she was younger. These witnesses were more than likely called to show that she was easily manipulated and desperately wanted to please other people in her life. Her attorneys are alleging that she gave a false confession because Richardson initially told the authorities her baby was delivered in the middle of the night in her bathroom, never had a pulse or a heartbeat. In a second police interview a few days later, though, investigators told her that they knew that that wasn't the truth. They told her that they had scientific evidence she burned the baby. In the months and years since, the evidence has been called into question. During her trial, for example, prosecutors have acknowledged that the bones show no evidence of burning, but they also say that a person can be burned without flames charring the bones. Additionally, a psychologist testified that Richardson was unable to defend herself during police questioning because of what he called a mental disorder. He said that Richardson was terrified of rejection and abandonment, and he said police used this to their advantage. He said it was remarkable she ever denied the allegations at all. When pressed, Richardson typically retreats into a very lonely, isolated world, according to Dr. Stuart Bassman, who was hired by the defense attorneys to examine her related to the charges in this particular case. Now, this doctor spent some 10 hours interviewing Richardson, reviewing documents, and spoke with her parents. Richardson developed this disorder that the doctor claims because of her upbringing and her biological makeup. Another factor that the psychologist testified to was that Richardson said she was sexually abused when she was 12. He said Richardson, who suffered from an eating disorder, had already started having insecurity issues with her body. In separate testimony, Richardson's attorney asked questions about if she had been bullied in middle school after a relationship ended. A high school counselor said that she believed that Richardson had been bullied. The psychologist said that the boy who abused Richardson took advantage of her desire to be liked. He was someone she looked up to, according to Bassman. Prosecutors immediately objected to the statements about the sexual abuse, and little else was said about them. During questioning and after the revelation, the prosecutors made it clear that the information the psychologist relied upon for his diagnosis came from Richardson herself. And that information was not always verified, according to the prosecutors. The prosecutor said Richardson most likely feared her parents, not law enforcement. That is a quick synopsis of the case. And really, what it raises two major issues. One, is there a false confession? Was Richardson manipulated in such a way that there is such a psychological coercion? Now, the United States Supreme Court has said that the police can lie to a defendant in the interrogation process. For example, they can say, "We know that's not the truth." That's just good old-fashioned interrogation. But when they start really pressuring her, start putting pressure on her, her family to come clean, you know, to really use the psychological coercion that she's going to somehow get some help, it's all going to be okay, that's where it gets problematic. Obviously, the court denied any motions to suppress, and so now the defense has to go with it's a false confession that she was pressured and she was saying anything that she was told to. And the defense then put on these witnesses to show that Richardson was a very timid person and would not normally fight back in any way and was a pleaser, and that her pleasing mentality is what made her confess to the crime that she didn't do, because you should believe her original statement that the child was stillborn. We had a case just last week in Colorado that we discussed on Crime Talk, where the mother had the child, suffocated the child, and then threw it over the fence, and the child deceased, sat in the cold for the most of the day until the neighbors came home and found it. The jury in that particular case determined that it was a murder. In this particular case with Richardson, the jury has to decide, do they believe that it was a stillborn? If it's a stillborn, no homicide. At most, it's kind of a, I don't know what they call it in most jurisdictions, but here they call it abuse of a corpse. Usually it's a misdemeanor for basically not disposing of a body in the appropriate way by calling the authorities. So that's the big issue. But the only way that the jury can get there is that they have to believe her statement that the child was stillborn, and basically that she panicked and that any subsequent statements she made were not the truth. That's a real problem. As a defense attorney, believe my client on the first time, not on the second statement. Normally, the first statement is usually not the most reliable one, because people just usually deny and say it. As things go on, little more pieces of the truth usually come out, unless, of course, there is a false confession. Hopefully, that satisfies the Crime Talk aficionados out there that wanted to discuss the Richardson case. It's going to be interesting. I'm not really sure how this is going to end up, but the jury has got a tough job. I think there's evidence both ways that can support a conviction or not guilty on the most serious charge. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think. Now, the next matter on the docket, and for those of you who don't want to hear anything about the Chris Watts case, now is your time to end the video. For those who want to know about the Chris Watts case, the pending civil matters now we'll talk about it. Not surprisingly, the foreclosure of the Watts house in Frederick, Colorado was continued yet again, and this was set out until 2020. A lot of people just can't seem to understand why they just don't sell the house. It is my humble opinion that the reason why JP Morgan Chase, the mortgage holder in this particular case, is delaying the foreclosure sale of the house is that they are waiting for the civil proceedings by Shanann's parents against Chris Watts to be resolved and have a judgment against him. Once that judgment enters, they'll take that piece of paper and they'll record it with the clerk and recorder in Weld County, Colorado. That lien now exists. And therefore, when the property is sold, the lien will go to satisfy the judgment or a part of the judgment. Since the family is asking for some $16 million, there's not going to be that much, but it'll be something. And that money would go then to the lien holder, which would be the Shanann Watts family. If JP Morgan Chase were to go forward with the foreclosure sale at this time, any excess monies after the mortgage would be paid off would go to Chris Watts. And once he were to get that check, he could send it off to his parents. He could, in theory, put it on his books in the jail. Once a judgment is obtained by Shanann's family for the wrongful death matter, they could then garnish it, but it makes it much more difficult to do so. So it is this humble attorney's opinion that the civil attorneys suing for the wrongful death claim against Chris Watts and the attorney for JP Morgan Chase, which is a local attorney, is simply coordinating that so as to make it easy for all, and JP Morgan Chase gets to look like the good guy in the end. We'll continue to follow it. Some people don't want to hear any more about it, but some people do. Most people that follow this channel, and not that we're trying to just continue to discuss this case forever and forever, but it's interesting. And there's been so many comments where people have said that they have never been affected by a case in the news such as this particular case of Chris Watts. Just the facts and the circumstances with the pregnant wife, Shanann, and the two young girls, Bella and Celeste. So that's all we have today for Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. Please subscribe, hit that like button, hit that little bell for notifications. We also have links if you want to get the official Crime Talk mug, please do so. And if you want to be a Patreon member, which we greatly appreciate, and for those who have signed up already, thank you very much. We will be shipping out your items if you are in the appropriate tier level. And please share the video with your friends and family. Have a great day.